You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The last U.S. troops left Vietnam on March 29, 1973. America's direct intervention in the Vietnam War was at an end after eight bloody years and 58,220 American lives lost. The nation and those veterans had a tough time processing and talking about this war that did not end with victory. But those vets are moving into their 70s, and time's growing shorter for them to tell their stories. Traverse City author Doug Stanton brings us a story of an Army recon platoon fighting its way through the Tet Offensive of 1968. His latest book, Odyssey of Echo Company, brings us the Vietnam War through the eyes of a young paratrooper named Stan Parker, and what a story it is. Doug Stanton, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Stateside.
Thank you so much.
Well, you have explored the sinking of the Indianapolis in World War II with your book In Harm's Way. That was the 900 sailors facing sharks in the elements and floating for 4 days. Only 317 survived. Your book Horse Soldiers, about that small, tough band of American soldiers who fought the Taliban in Afghanistan on horseback. What turned your attention to the Vietnam War and to Echo Company?
I met Stanley Parker, the son of an iron worker from Gary, Indiana, in a helicopter in Afghanistan researching horse soldiers. I was standing at the ramp. We were trying to go to the Pakistan border. I was hoping to live with a special forces camp for a couple of days. And this older soldier had asked me if I'd written In Harm's Way, my World War II story, which I see as a survival story. I'm interested in those existential moments when we can peer into someone's soul and realize what it means to try to be human in an inhumane environment, essentially.
That's true survival.
Right. Stanley had read that book, and he said, "Would you write about Vietnam? It's 2005. We're flying over Afghanistan." And I said, "I don't think so. I don't think America is ready to really hear the Vietnam story in the midst of these two other wars, including Iraq." So time passed as it does. I lectured in Colorado at the Air Force Academy, and we began a correspondence. And thus began the odyssey, my own odyssey, to write the book, The Odyssey of Echo Company, because I really felt it's a journey for Stan Parker from the Midwest through boyhood into Vietnam. He comes home, and the homecoming is so important. This book, in some ways, I hope, is a homecoming. And then we go back to Vietnam with Stan in 2014, and something happens, which really, I think, snaps the book into focus.
I found it interesting, as this percolated in your mind, you finally felt ready, and when you reached out to Stan, he said, "Everybody's ready to talk now."
Yeah, he had been thinking of this for years. This is why I think America needs to listen now, and why I think Vietnam is one of our unfinished narratives for us as a country. You and I can talk about World War II very easily, and even the Civil War, but when we come to Vietnam, what's our frame of reference? And I try to separate the soldier from the war in this. You don't have to really like Vietnam, but who does? And you don't have to dislike it either. You just simply have to be in witness of the story and listen, because I think all of us need to listen. This book is about acknowledgement and citizenship in a way. It's just an act of witness. And we have so many other veterans coming home from other wars, men and women, and they're going to need the same kind of attention. So it's a book about storytelling.
Let's talk about Echo Company and its men. Now, These were Screaming Eagles, the 101st Airborne, and their job was particularly risky, wasn't it?
It's very risky because they're the reconnaissance platoon of a battalion. So there are four other companies in the battalion. So let's say you and I are part of the platoon. We'd say, "Let's go downtown, see what's going on. We'll radio back to headquarters here. And if it's good or bad, we'll make a decision." But we're out there on our own, and we're highly trained, but really ill-prepared for what happens in this thing called the Tet Offensive.
It's pretty heartbreaking as you read Stan's journey from this gung-ho kid who signed up right after high school, and he could not wait to get in. And you see the realities of combat and what it does to him.
You know what? You're right. Yeah, and you think, well, why would he sign up? Well, traveling around the country and interviewing, here they are, the sons of World War II, and the daughters, by the way. So Stan's father had been in World War II 21 years earlier. So we're 17 years on, essentially, from 9/11, 16. And that influences our daily life so much. So we just want to remember for a moment, 1966, while there is protest in America, 67 and 68 are the boiling points. And very quickly, the world changes. It's not a war they're prepared for.
Not a war that their fathers could relate to.
Right.
The ones who fought in Korea, the ones who fought in World War II.
They are prepared for the war, but they're not prepared for its tempo and chaos. I mean, they're highly trained. They have to first enlist in the Army, which they did, and then volunteer for the recon platoon. But it's asymmetrical. We're not taking ground. How are we keeping score? It's through the body count. We're living alone. We're not sleeping. Ambush at night. Walk during the day. There is no tent. There is no sleeping bag. It is a completely animal-like experience. And you're 19 years old, and the helicopter is taking us from point A to point B in a matter of a day to six different locations. I think the book, if anything, attempts to order chaos. And this brings us today, Cynthia. When you ask a Vietnam veteran what happened, often they don't know how to begin to talk about it. And if you can't tell your story, it's not your story because you don't have the story. And so this is what I think with the Ken Burns documentary and so many things that are 50th anniversary that we can reflect on today.
Remind us again, especially for those who were not around when this was in the headlines, what happened with the Tet Offensive in 1968?
So the war had been supposedly going somewhat well. It really hadn't. I mean,
but that's what the folks at home in America were being told.
Right. It was tough. We won't crunch the numbers right here, but President Johnson and General Westmoreland, for instance, had promised that there was light at this end of this tunnel, that things were trending upward. On January 30th and 31st of 1968, you know, say months after these promises back in the States, some 100,000 enemy troops had simultaneously attacked throughout the country.
At a time when they had said they wanted a truce for a holiday.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
So how could this be? How could this be true and happen at the same time we're quote, beating them? And so the disparity, the dissonance between that statement and those images, which I wasn't old enough to really have this focused in my consciousness, and part of the book is trying to figure this out for myself, but those images on the television screen of this happening around the country were so unsettling to America that strategically the North Vietnamese had a turning point here. Tactically, they lost. The Viet Cong were crushed. The MVA suffered. We're suffering enormous losses, by the way, in bombing. It was not as if they were a robust force here that was not feeling any pain. They were. But the Tet came out of nowhere, and Walter Cronkite took off his glasses on the air and said, things aren't as well as we thought. And guess what happened next? President Johnson decides not to run for re-election.
The whole public opinion at home,
right.
That was, as you say, a watershed moment.
Right, exactly.
How did Stan and the other men in his unit, how did they come to view this war that they were fighting and dying in? Kind of give us a sense of those gung-ho kids in basic training and then their journey.
Almost like any other soldier in any war, I want to point out. But in particular, there are letters in the book that are on the pages. You can read Stan saying, we're going to go get him. General Westmoreland says we're winning. And 3, 4, 5 months later, he's really fighting like all soldiers for the person next to him, and he's fighting to get home in this case. So I imagine the first boot coming out of the first helicopter, stepping down into the ground and pushing off. And at that point, that young man is innocent, and he thinks that he's stepping towards victory. Quickly, those steps become nothing more than a journey home. And that journey takes 50 years, actually. And it's taking 50 years for so many of us that we meet at the library and the movie line. Anybody who's 70 is thinking about Vietnam. And if you don't believe that, just go up and ask a question. And if you're 40 or if you're 20, you're still in a family that's thinking about Vietnam because everyone knows somebody who was there, as Michael Hare says in his great book, Dispatches. And this is why I think it's an important story to tell.
I'm talking with Doug Stanton, the author of The Odyssey of Echo Company, looking at the 1968 Tet Offensive and the battle to survive the Vietnam War. What was Recon Platoon's casualty rate? You kind of opened the book with it. It was pretty ferocious.
Yeah, they had a high in, what did I say, 80%, 74% casualty rate. So, and Stan Parker was wounded three times. Three of the personnel were killed, which was David Fravel, Charlie Pyle, and Daryl Lintner. Those deaths, what's so heartbreaking and both poignant is the privacy of the terror and the small homages that the guys paid to each other.
Do you mean by privacy of the terror?
Well, no one remembers Charlie Pyle or Daryl Lintner.
But isn't that true in every war?
When
you think of all the...
That is the terror of the war. Then it's the private... What's terrible about it is how private it is and how the loss of that person will never live again. And And these guys, and like I say, our neighbors come home having experienced this, and they're thinking about it. It's like Vietnam is our secret. I met a gentleman in Raleigh, North Carolina recently who had been executive of a Fortune 500 company. He said, I quickly learned not to tell anyone on the board that I had been in Vietnam. Now, he had not, you know, his tour had been harrowing, but he'd come home like every other soldier from every other war. But the community messaging was, we don't want to know. So that is a national shame. Why should that be? Why should that guy, all the energy he's spending keeping that secret is energy he's not doing something else with in his life.
It's like that open program on the computer going,
right.
Always drawing energy. Speaking of that adjustment home, I'd love if you'd read an excerpt from the Odyssey of Echo Company that really kind of very eloquently addresses that feeling of disconnect when they come home. Set it up for us.
Sure. Dwight Lane is returning to rural Indiana. He's been a member of reconnaissance platoon with Stanley Parker and a fellow named Charlie Pyle, who was killed in March of 1968 and whose death is a marker. You know what? We'd be sitting around and, hey, this happened after Charlie died, or this happened before Charlie died. And this is how we keep time in war. And I wanted to note Dwight's own honoring of Charlie's memory. Returning home, Dwight Lane tries to make sense of Charlie Pyle's death and discovers, as far as he can tell, that there isn't any. It happened. Charlie died. This is the best he can come up with. Dwight had joined the Army to escape Indiana and see the world. Growing up, he often wondered about the scars his father had gotten in World War II, which the old man never talked about. It will be years on his father's deathbed, in fact, before his father will tell Dwight what he thinks of that war, marching across Europe, the bodies that will spring up in his field of vision years later, back in Indiana, when he's idling along in his life, being Dwight's father. But if Dwight had been able, as he knelt in the rice paddy with Charlie Pyle in his arms, Dwight would have chosen, with all of his might, at that moment, to slide forward in time and come to rest at his father's deathbed. And he would have been close to his father's lips and listened as the old man explained how to understand the death of Charlie Pyle. What would his father have told him, he wonders? Accept it? Move on? Accept death? He doesn't know what his father would have said, and he knows that he never will. The truth is, the platoon loved Charlie Pyle in those moments when he was alive with them, and then he was gone. After the war, few look for his family, for his friends. They never look for sign of him after the war. They remember him, though. They remember him. They never forget.
Doug Stanton reading an excerpt from the Odyssey of Echo Company. As you talk about this book, you've got an event tonight at the Ann Arbor District Library. You're meeting people. What surprises you? What jumps out at you as far as the reactions people have to talking about this war?
I'm surprised, though I shouldn't be, it's true of my other books, that women are buying this book, because what it is they're eavesdropping by proxy on what grandfather did, father, uncle, brother. And you know, the American male opens up around 70. He loosens up. You know, Tom Brokaw discovered this. But women are much more advanced than men, and they do this earlier in life, and they're willing. They're actually, their steel is harder, and so they're able to confront this story, and they want to know. And that's what surprised me, is just that.
Yeah, because certainly Brokaw was able to get those memories in The Greatest Generation from the World War II soldiers, Stephen Ambrose with, for example, Citizen Soldiers and Band of Brothers. There's something about reaching that 70-something mark where you kind of realize time is running out and you don't have forever to let this get out. What did telling his story do to you for Stan Parker?
It made me realize that we don't have to solve the world's problems, but we do have to, I think, engage and listen to them. I mean, we can't solve them. We do have to solve them, but how can we? And there is so much going on in the world right now, and I've written 3 books about combat. But what I realized that these veterans in particular, let's not even use the word veteran, these people, this is a book about people, wanted to be acknowledged. And they didn't want me to either accept or reject them. They prefer that I not reject them. But the fact that I was listening, what you asked surprised me. I can't tell you the depth of feeling that a generation of Americans has that no one has ever listened to them, whatever race or creed. And it's shocking. And it is like this other substrate of story floating through our consciousness among all the other chaos that's going on that I think is worthy of exploration. Stan Parker, 18 years after he comes home from Vietnam, is getting gas in Colorado, and a gentleman walks up and says, "Were you in Vietnam?" Because he sees his cap. Stan says, "Yes." He's shocked by the question. "May I buy your gas?" That was the first time anyone in Stan Parker's life had said the word Vietnam to him, other than a World War II veteran when he, shortly after he came home, met him at the mailbox, retrieving his own mail. Stan said, "Hey, how you doing?" The guy said, "Well, I haven't seen you in a while, Stan Parker." And he said, "Well, I've been over in Vietnam." And the guy said, "Well, that's okay. We don't need to talk about that." And he went back into his house. So however you felt about the war, it does not matter. What matters is the humanity of our fellow citizens and the pain that we're all carrying, and in this case, because of the Vietnam War. And so what surprised me is just my lack of awareness of that.
And when you think of the legacy of this war, Doug, how does what happened there 50 years ago still impact our military, our foreign policy, and our psyche as Americans?
Well, I mean, in some ways, the fact that we left Vietnam not as the as our usual victor cautioned us against future wars. We're always fighting the last war, they say. I will say that my book, Horse Soldiers, is about another American experiment in counterinsurgency that was successful. So maybe we learned from those lessons. But I want to say that I think, first of all, it's the way we treat people returning from combat today. The great lesson from Vietnam is to separate the war from the soldier. If you look at Colin Powell's 2003 speech to the UN about weapons of mass destruction, most people I know in intelligence, you know, say they weren't there in the way we thought. Just compare that to the Gulf and Tonkin resolution in 64, another political reason to go into war, both of them spurious. Well, we treat the two veterans of those two different contexts very differently. But why? I mean, that's the question, and we won't answer it here, but we should reflect on that.
Doug Stanton is appearing this evening at the Ann Arbor District Library talking about the Odyssey of Echo Company. He's going to take questions, sign his book. The event is co-hosted by Nicola's Book, so it's 7 to 8:30 tonight, Ann Arbor District Library. The Odyssey of Echo Company. Doug Stanton, thank you so much.
Thank you.